the Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
Or in tonight's case, it's Karen Frazier and some other guy. Hey, everybody.
That's me.
Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. Rick had a death in the family, and he is out, which means I cannot say anything kind of mean or anything about him. But sitting in for him is our good friend and science editor, Mr. J.D. Harrison. Hey, J.D.
Hey, Karen. How you doing?
I'm great. Thank you so much for being here. This is a big help. We used to do shows like this together all the time, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Back in the day.
That's right. Before you got too big for us and moved on to other things.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, so are you feeling honored and privileged to be with me tonight, given the fact that I am just so internationally famous now after my appearance on the Travel Channel?
Absolutely, Your Highness. Absolutely.
Hey, we got a really good show tonight. We're going to be talking to John Collins of Northwest. West Coast Ghost Hunter. Sorry, John. I just absolutely blanked out. I was reading the chat room. I can't do that. Anyway, we're going to be talking to John Collins, and John is great. I actually participated with West Coast Ghost Hunters this past Saturday on an investigation down at the Klondike in St. Helens. And for those of you who might be fans of the Ryan Buell show, what's it called, JD?
Ryan Buell.
Paranormal State.
Thank you. Yeah. So that's for those it. Who might be fans of Lorraine Warren and Paranormal State.
You have to understand something, okay? I know the name of the show, but originally and educational-wise, I went to West Virginia University, and that school that he came from that shall not be named is a rival, and I can't say it.
I got it. It's just pure jealousy, pure and utter jealousy.
No, not jealous. What's a nitany? I want to know what a nitany is, okay?
It sounds like a little lice louse.
A nitany lion. What is that?
It's a lion with lice.
Yeah, that sounds like something you need to put in a bug dip, you know what I mean, to get rid of it. I don't know. But anyway.
So also, it's Veterans Day, and wanted to say thank you to any of you who are listening and to all of the veterans out there, whether you're currently in the military or whether you have served in the past. Thank you very much. Anything to add, JD?
No, thank you. Oh. Your service has been greatly appreciated. I was there too, so.
Yeah, you're a veteran.
Yes, I am.
Oh, what are you a veteran of?
The United States Air Force. I served from 1984 to 1992.
Well, thank you to you, too. Yes, my husband, Techie McScience Geek, also known as Jim, is also a veteran of the Navy, and I believe, is Chad a veteran, Cheryl?
He is. Chad was in the Air Force.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you, Chad, and thank you to Jim, who also, it's his birthday. So, happy birthday, Jim.
Happy birthday,
okay.
Tim.
Have I covered all of the important aspects of things that we needed to cover, Cheryl?
Oh, no.
You got something to say.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say the best is yet to come. Ha ha, just kidding. Does everyone know what that means?
Well, when you say the best is yet to come, I think about an 80s Sticks song when the sticks start to go downhill just a little bit. Oh, no, that was the best of times. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, there's one little announcement that we have to add here, and it has to do with the November issue of the magazine.
Hallelujah!
Yay!
Is it out?
It is out. It is out, and it's online. And for anyone who wants to read it, they can read it for free at paranormalunderground.net. You do have to register, but then you can log in and read it on the forum. And you can also go to our magazine archive, also available on the homepage, and read all the past issues for free. So that's up there. I just wanted to mention real quick that in the November issue we have on the cover the paranormal investigative team called Alpha, and they one of their founders is Scott Tepperman. You may know him on the TV show Ghost Hunters International. So basically they are
from South Park.
Yeah, that's somebody else, but yeah.
That's Scott Teneman, the one who ate his parents when Cartman cooked him up as chili.
Yeah, and I think that Alpha is going to join us on a future radio show, probably, you know, towards the end of the year, maybe. We're still working that out, but yeah.
All right. Awesome.
Also, I just wanted to mention that we have a lot of cool stories, ranging from an article on the Beast of Exmoor to the Lordsburg Door. We have some UFO stories by Rick, and we have an investigation at the Orpheum by Michelle Pillow, who just recently did an investigation there. That's a good one. And then we have a new column from Rob St. Helen called The Tales from the Haunted Heathman Hotel.
And awesome. He works there. My first one with Rob's stories.
Yeah.
So they promise to be pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. So this is going to be the first installment, but there's going to be more to come. So
yay, just Rob, check it out. Thank you.
Yay. Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. So, just in case anybody gives a rip, because I've been having conversations today with mothers and mothers-in-law wanting to watch a replay of the show that was on the Travel Channel that I did, and many, many conversations. Ask Cheryl when I came on the air. Before we came on the air, I was sort of beating my head against the desk because apparently it's technology sometimes escapes our parents. Anyway, the show is on now on the Travel Channel, but you are not allowed to leave. So you can set your DVR because I don't come on until half past the hour. It also replays tonight at 10, I think. Although if you're on the East Coast, it's over probably. Okay. So I want to bring John on a little bit early, Cheryl, if we can.
Okay.
So why don't we go to a break? Because we were talking before before we came on the air about this contrail missile thing, and I thought it might be just a good conversation to have. So let's bring John on because he's got lots of opinions.
All right, let's do it.
All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to Paranormal Underground Radio, and we're coming right back with West Coast Ghost Hunters, John Collins.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
For those of you who don't like this type of music, we apologize, but in the words of the infamous Dr. Phil,
it ain't about you!
Now shut up and listen.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio. I'm Karen Frazier, and sitting in with me tonight in place of Rick Hale, the other guy, is J.D. Harrison. Hey, J.D.
Hey, everybody. How's you doing?
Glad yeah, so I forgot when we were before we went to break and when I was doing the show setup, which Cheryl now insists, she makes me do like these little structural things in the show, which totally sucks. I'll do them.
They're awesome.
So I forgot to mention when I was setting up the show that later, after we talk to John, we're going to be talking to Bert Coates, who's going to be telling us about, I don't know, the way that I interpret it is pretty much paranormal gear that sucks.
Yeah.
Is that a close interpretation, Cheryl?
Yeah, that works.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, not to waste your money on.
Yeah, okay. See, that's more constructive than sucks and more descriptive.
Right.
Very good. Okay, so we have our guest on the line with us. We're talking to West Coast Ghost Hunters, John Collins. John has founded West Coast Ghost Hunters, East Coast Ghost Hunters, and he himself is a paranormal investigator. Hi, John.
Hi, Karen. How are you doing?
Very well. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, and I look forward to participating.
Yeah, I know. Well, I know you pretty well, so this should go pretty easily, right?
I hope so.
it'll be fun. You know, the biggest thing is that I do not have snickerdoodles tonight. I'm very sorry.
Yeah.
And if you refer to her as your highness every once in a while, things will be really smooth.
That'll just grease the skids.
That's awesome advice, JD. I've actually had the privilege to investigate with Karen in her princess light. So
I forgot I had when we were down at the Klondike in St. Helens, Oregon, which, by the way, is where Twilight was filmed, some of it, so that's really not impressive. Anyway, I had my pretty, pretty pink princess flashlight, and it was highly coveted by many people who were there on investigation. Would you not agree that there were people that were eyeing my flashlight, John?
I think that it's a miracle you made it home with it, but for the record, I was not one that was coveting your flashlight.
No, if you want John to follow you around, all you have to do is bring snickerdoodles. Yeah. I figured that out, you know.
There you go.
That's right. That's loyalty. I told John I was going to make him some snickerdoodles, but not bake them, just roll them in cinnamon and stick them in the baggie, and he could bake them himself. So I'll have to get working on that for you, John.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So before we start talking about West Coast Ghost Hunters, East Coast Ghost Hunters, and investigation, we were talking before the show about this contrail. And Cheryl, you might actually want to pull Chad on real quick if you can as well. Is that possible?
Yes, it is. He'll be on in just a minute.
Yeah, because JD has some real definite opinions. So for those of you who don't watch the news and don't, kind of live under a rock, on Monday, there was film of what was reported to be a missile being shot off the coast of Los Angeles. And at the time, the Defense Department kind of scrambled around and they said, well, it's not one of ours. We don't know what it is. And then somebody came out, I believe it was yesterday, and said, oh, it was just a contrail. And JD, you had some really, really definite opinions about that.
Yeah, I seen it. I looked at it. I've read it, followed it, all that good stuff. It's not a contrail. I spent time in the Air Force. I've seen a lot of contrails, a lot of different planes. Nothing military produces a contrail like that. And if it's a commercial plane producing a contrail, there's a problem. It wouldn't have got that high. You have to understand what a contrail is. It's the condensation of the hot vapors that come out of the jet engine. And the air temperature does not get cold enough to form that condensation until the aircraft is at around 25,000 feet.
Okay, so what do you think it is? UFO?
I know. it looks like a missile launch.
Okay. Did you see
I've
it, John?
I've seen missile launches, yeah. And it looks like a missile launch.
What do you think of it, John?
Well, I haven't seen it. So, okay. But I think anything's possible, and if the United States government says it's a contrail, there's a good chance that it isn't. So, you know, it's just I'll play the percentages.
Okay, and Chad, you had a real definite opinion about it too, right?
Well, I'd heard maybe it was like a missile shot off of a cargo ship, maybe by Iran or China, just to kind of send us a message.
Huh. Okay, well, I tend to think it was a contrail, and I base that on absolutely nothing. On the fact that, what was it, Chad, you said that I believe everything that's on the news? Is that what
it
was? And so Chad's going to have it put on the news tomorrow night that I agreed to give him $1 million. And he can wait for a long time for that. Okay, well, I just wanted to get everybody's opinion on it really fast. Let's talk to John.
What would you like to know?
John, let's first talk about the West Coast Ghost Hunters and East Coast Ghost Hunters site. And are you also doing a UK Ghost Hunter site? Is that a rumor I heard at some point?
Well, actually, you know, it's there. It's ukghosthunters.net, and that will get you into the community. When I first put the website together, I was basically looking for a kind of a catchy name, because you have to have something people would remember, and West Coast Ghost Hunters was something that just had a good ring to it. And when I did that, and the popularity of the website was there, and things started working and having some success, I'd get emails and people commenting, boy, if you had an East Coast, I'd really love to sign up for East Coast, but I'm uncomfortable about being a member of West Coast when I live in New York or somewhere on the East Coast. So our web developer that works with us said, well, let's make a individual login page. You can put some of its own flavor on it and develop that as time goes, but it gets them into the community for a comfort level. And as soon as we got East Coast going, we have 450 some members and 7 countries, and a good chunk of those members, a good percentage, would be folks from the United Kingdom. So to give them their own geographical identity, we created a UK ghosthunters.net, and that's working out very well too. So that's it.
Yeah, so tell me why you decided that you wanted to build this online paranormal community.
Well, I had a profound paranormal experience and was in Washington, D.C. We had 3 crazy days in a hotel. My wife did as well. And when I got back to Portland, I started looking for people in the Portland area or somewhere, you know, in close proximity where I could, you know, find for a lack of better words, a support group or like-minded people and those kind of things. Reaching out for teams that are in the close proximity of Portland, I would find websites and all about dedicated professionals that never charge for investigations and things like that. And I'd send them messages and I'd get, you know, kind of a canned response saying, your message is important to us. We will get back to you promptly. Didn't get back to me, didn't get back to me, didn't get back to me. It was kind of a need for my own quest to find out more information and be part of investigating and things like that. So I wanted to create an environment that would foster open communications where people could come on, and I did it in a community setting, you know, like a Facebook setting, so you could have your own identity and be able to ask questions and find teams and resources. And it's just started from that idea, and it's developing into what it's becoming now, and that's the genesis of it.
John, go ahead, JD.
John, could you I'd like you, if you would, like, elaborate a little bit about your experiences in Washington for our listeners, in case you know, none of them are familiar with it. Like, what types of things happen?
Well, it's an 14-day trip, and I'm there the first part of the trip as a lobbyist, and I have a briefcase with me that's I work in the water industry, and it has position papers and things for the water industry, Chemical Security Act, all kinds of things, infrastructure trust banks. These are folders that were put together for when you visit with your legislators, your senators, your representatives. You could leave them some material behind. So after I got done with my 4 days of lobbying, my wife came in and flew into Washington. The one suitcase with the suits and all the stuff in the briefcase with all the work paperwork were all zipped up, and then it became a great vacation. She and I went to to New York and Philadelphia. Spent some time in Gettysburg, which was awesome. That's like my, well, I've been there several times. But anyway, so we had a wonderful vacation. We got back to Washington, D.C., and we stayed at the Wardman Hotel in Woodley Park. That's out by the National Smithsonian Zoo. So it's a neat place, and we were put into an awesome room in the older part of the hotel. It's about 100 years old, and things were going along great. And we went out and saw a night. We checked in, went out on a night tour, and we got back and got some sleep. Got up in the morning. I walked down the hallway. My suitcase, or excuse me, my briefcase that I was had all my work in for the lobbying was actually opened up, laying on its side on a big desk that was in the front room of the suite we were in. All my papers were out, and they were put into piles. The Chemical Security Acts, from the four or five folders that I had left over, because you didn't want to. Have, you know, you always wanted to have plenty when you talk to these people. You don't know if you're meeting with one or five. So all the chemical papers are all the same. All the infrastructure papers are all together. Things are just put in neat little piles, but my briefcase is laying on its side. The chair's there. Instantly I thought, well, we've been robbed, but the door was locked. The deadbolt was locked. The windows are shut. It's a second story of the older part of the hotel. And so I thought, well, maybe it's identity theft. In New York, I'd bought a new camera, and there was all kinds of souvenirs. My wife bought some handbags. I mean, if you were going to be robbed, there was something for somebody to steal, and everything was there. So I didn't know what that was, and I just thought it was really, I spent the whole day kind of in a, thinking back where you pick up your stuff and you put it all up, and did I get up in the middle of the night? Did I sleepwalk? Boy, I've been on the road a long time. I didn't have an answer for it, so it was just kind of out there, and so things just kept happening. And when we got done with our 3 days in that hotel room, we flew back to Portland. We hadn't said a word to each other, and we got in the car. We paid for the parking. We started down 205 to come home, and I said to my wife, I said, Tara, I've got to talk to you about our hotel room. She goes, you mean the ghost? And so, she went on to tell me about an experience she had. She was taking a shower. I was down getting some cheeseburgers and beers because I was too cheap to pay for the room service in the bar, and she was going to take a shower. And she unrolled the window, and the window, she got this cold breeze. She said, the window being open, but she got this chilly feeling, and the window actually shut itself. And so it's an older building. It's a crank window. You think wind, or, she didn't understand. She started to do it again, and it cranked itself shut again. And she said she couldn't quantify what the feeling was, but there was something that was saying that window shouldn't be open. And so... Yeah. She just said, okay, won't open the window. It's an older building it was at one time it was apartments. One of the chief justices lived there. And she said she just took her shower and she knew something was weird. And, it's just kind of experiences like that. It's just, it was an interesting 3 days. Let's put it that way.
I think it might have been an OCD ghost.
An OCD.
It stacked your papers. It needed the window shut. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, and well, I think.
Go ahead, John. I'm sorry.
Well, that's all right. I think that, the last day we were there, we went out, we went out outside and I took some pictures of the beautiful courtyard and stuff like where our room would be. And then after Tara talked to me about it, I realized that second floor was. There's the way the landscaping was and stuff. It was actually pretty accessible if somebody wanted to come through a window or use that to break in or something. So I always thought that possibly this was a benevolent spirit that was saying, hey, you don't want that window open. And maybe looking at, I don't have an answer. And I think that's the epitome of paranormal. It's unexplainable. So
it's always the driving force, isn't it? That you don't have answers and you want them.
So, came home and, like I said, started to try to find people that were like-minded, and just took the initiative to start that website. And I wanted a place that where people could come. And, you know, if you look at the website, it basically says you have to be kind and honest and fair and square and conduct yourself in a moral and right manner. Otherwise, we kick you out. And, you know, we're pushing a year, and I've only had to kick 6 people out, and they show their colors pretty quick. And so
will you be reinstating me soon then? Or
yeah.
I'll make you cookies.
Yeah.
I was banned for life, so, you know. John, you have a scientific background. And I'm sure that you ran this through your head looking for a logical explanation for all of it. And obviously, you didn't come up with it.
I didn't.
My question is, how did that make you feel about what you've learned, what has been in place, your worldview, so to speak, with your training and all?
Well, worldviews are, you know, it's just what it kind of gives you a sense of there's a purpose for why we're here and possibly where we're going after this journey. So, you know, my father, I always figured my dad, he died when I was 22, and he had a great relationship with my father. And I thought, if anybody could come back and get my attention and say, it's going to be okay, I'll see you later, or something like that, that would happen. So spending another 20 years and never having any kind of a thought of paranormal or ghost or things like that, or an afterlife other than, you know, what you're raised up in your Christian beliefs or whatever your beliefs are. It was a real awakening, and that's been confirmed a few times now by investigations and other people's experiences. And I think it's kind of comforting that there's something for us to go on to, or hopefully there is. Yeah. I mean, you know,
it changed my life. So yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, I've heard that a lot, from people that have said that, and that's great. I mean, I think that's great, you know, bring a little bit more awareness to people and that type of thing. So.
So, John, as you were saying that, I thought you were saying something that was really interesting, because it sort of parallels my experience. And I wonder if it's sort of a genesis of belief, in that I always thought that if somebody was going to convince me that ghosts were real, it would be my grandmother or my grandfather. So I wonder if do you think that's a pretty common experience?
I it is for me, and it obviously is for you. So it's common for us, and you know,
yeah, that's
we,
right.
So we share something other than the love of Snickerdoodles. So
that's right.
There you go.
I like to bake them, and he likes to eat them.
Yeah. The overwhelming thing I get from this is that people have had experiences, or they're not sure. You know, I love a good skeptic, because that gives you the opportunity to really, you know, every team has to have somebody that. There's always one member that's, oh, that's a ghost. And there's always one member, nah, that's not it. You know, and the kind of the parallel back and forth, you know. That's, I think that makes a good team.
Yeah, that's my marriage. That's a ghost. No, it's not. I bet you can't guess which one is which, huh? So, you've been doing this just for a year, huh?
A little over, yeah.
Wow, that's, you went from 0 to 60 in like 30 seconds. You were, in like 5 seconds. Boom.
Year and a half.
Yeah, boy, and I just, you know, watching you investigate with all of that equipment and everything else, I figured you'd been in this for years and years and years. So let's talk about the community aspect of West Coast Ghost Hunters, because I have to tell you, all joking aside, I have not been kicked off the site. Well, maybe I have been now, because I couldn't remember my password earlier, and maybe I actually am kicked off the site, but... It's been a wonderful experience, as far as I've seen, for collaboration, and people are talking in ways that I haven't seen happen before, and you maintain such a positive atmosphere there that I think that's part of it. But why is that important to you?
Well, because if given a chance, I believe people are pretty good people, and especially if they're working on a common mission or goal, and... You know, we won't tolerate negativity or, you know, things like that. So I think it's, you know, and again, the website's going to be a year old here pretty soon. And, you know, it's great that it's grown and there's just world-class quality people that are participating. But I have kind of a deep and dark fear that someday the bums will show up and I hope that doesn't happen, but you know, that's part of being successful too.
Yeah, from our experiences that you know, you give them a certain amount of rope and eventually they're going to leave themselves anyway.
You bet. You know, and I think that's the other part of the community part of it. People choose to participate with other people and send them messages and share pictures and talk about investigations. And if there's somebody that's kind of like the rotten apple in the barrel, I guess nobody will play with them, and it'll be self-policing to that extent.
My experience is that is ultimately what happens, yes. It may take a while, and it may be a little annoying, but eventually it happens.
John, you conduct investigations also, right?
And, I do, yes.
Could you tell our listeners a little bit about some of the methods you use in your investigations and different types of things you look for and what you do with that information?
I'd like to answer that question. What he does is he rolls out a bunch of cords in an attempt to make me fall flat on my face. All right, John, go on.
Yeah, well, we're blessed by our team is heavy in the equipment mode.
Boy, and, howdy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What, you know, we use several IR cameras and DVRs, and we take the approach that we would rather videotape as much of an area. You know, you make a controlled environment, and the fact that you're looking for how much space and energy can be spent and baseline readings with EMF meters and temperature, and, you know, I am an engineering and science background, and if I can't see it, taste it, smell it, I mean, it's got to be physical for me to really wrap my arms around it. So I like to use a lot of equipment, and we do that, and everybody is on board with the fact that we want to take lots of pictures, and we have one new, for a lack of better words, her name's Jennifer. She's a recruit. She's really liking this full spectrum, and then our super tech-driven investigator, tech manager, lead investigator, if you need him, Rob St. Helens. He's a full spectrum kind of guy. He loves to take those pictures. For me, I'm still trying to figure out the full spectrum as far as, to me, they look like purple pictures, but I know that someday somebody's going to show me something truly amazing that wouldn't be caught in a regular, you know, what our eyes see in the field.
Right.
So, but, you know, we're employing those technologies. We have lots of discussions as a group and talk about where we should spend our resources for, like an EMF pump. You see things on TV. You know, TVs and actually is, you can say what you want about all the guys running around on TV and stuff, but they are pretty good at about showing you the new gadgets and things like that.
Right.
So, you know, so I know that's a long-winded way to answer your question, but
no, that's okay.
I showed up with my trusty recorder and my kid, and thinking, okay, here I am, ready to go. And they walk in with boxes and boxes and boxes. I was feeling inadequate. I was feeling technologically inadequate.
Well, while we're on the subject of this, one of our listeners has a question. Got to Anime Fever. Wanted to ask you, have you had any of those oh crap moments?
Yes, I've had an oh crap moment. We were in right outside of Crescent City, California, on an investigation at a really neat couple's house, and we've been back, and they're our friends now. We heard about aberrations and things, and getting into the night, William, another investigator from our team, he and I were centrally located in an area, and this cowboy appears. He's a tall gentleman wearing a cowboy hat and a duster. So it was a, for a lack of better words, a true oh my god moment. And I didn't freak out. I actually was on radio communication with, we use a trailer for well, not Ghost Lab trailer, but a trailer that we use. So, but it, for lack of better words, kind of like Ghost Lab, we have our monitors in there so we can keep a different environment if we're doing a residential application. And I didn't realize how much it affected me until I went back and we listened to the recordings, because we're several hours into this investigation, and after I saw this thing, just my voice, my manner, you can sense the what was happening to me. And then about 20 minutes through that time period, I said, guys, I think we got to go, and I just started wrapping up equipment. Normally I would think you would have the holy grail of paranormal activity, and I mean, see a full body apparition, have your team member William, who I said, William, he actually saw part of this and could verify it, and all this stuff. But it drained me physically, and
yeah,
it basically does. Scared right. The hell out of me in that respect. So yeah, I've had that moment. I sure have.
And you need time to process it too. I've only seen one full bodied apparition ever. And I was tremendously excited, extremely exhausted, and just I needed time to go think.
Yeah, it was a good day and a half or so before that, mm-hmm. that kind of worked its way through, 36-hour kind of
sure.
thing.
Now, when we were up at Wellington here in October and you were with us, you had an interesting little experience as well, just as you entered the snow shed, didn't you?
Yeah, I had my sleeve tugged. And so, you know, and I knew that there's kids there, you know, and some of it you always wonder because you know the backstory and things like that. Right. But you know, it was cool. I like that. Wellington is some place that's to me that is, I can see why Bert and Jamie, you know, how passionate they are, and they've got a real good team. And Karen, you're all about Wellington. People gravitate to that place because of how. Which is it's awesome, but for me, I don't go to Wellington to ghost hunt or whatever. I go, and I'll be back every year, once or twice a year, because it's kind of a sanctuary to me, and the good spirits and the good things that are there. Even though it wasn't, you know, as you well know, you wrote your book that it was a tragic accident, and you know, sure. and what 100 lives lost that. It seems just serene and peaceful to me. So
I agree, and that's generally what tends to happen. You know, what's interesting is I watched one of your team members absolutely fall in love with the place in the same way that Bert and Jamie and I have. Mm-hmm. And it was Rob, and I could see it happening. It was, and I don't know if you were aware that it was happening.
I was.
I know you, that book.
You know, when I said to him, Rob, are you okay? Were you there? I mean, Rob is we were on an investigation again. It was near Southern Oregon, Northern California. And I watched Rob jump and do a spin. You know, he's a hockey player and he's on ice. Right. But I mean, he gets so keyed up and so excited about, you know, let's set up our gear. We're going in. I mean, you know, he's just.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of that. Yeah.
Yeah, but in Wellington, Rob was just, you know, I thought he might be sick or coming down with something, and it was just it just grabbed him. Yeah, I was a witness to that for sure.
Yeah. It's to me, it's very cool to watch people experience what I did up there. So I enjoy that a lot. Hey, we're going to take a break, and you're going to stick around for another segment. And actually, then you're going to stick around when Bert's talking, because you asked to do the lightning round.
I did, and I'd love to speak to Bert. He's a great guy.
Okay, well, you can play interviewer when Bert comes on. So you're listening to Paranormal Underground Radio, and we will be back with John Collins of West Coast Ghost Hunters in just a minute.
Thank you.
know that you can talk to your favorite show hosts from the Z-Talk Radio Network? Check out the forum and see what it's all about at ztalkradio.com.
Station identification.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Operating frequency
on ztalkradio.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's Karen Frazier, and with me sitting in for Rick Hale tonight is J.D. Harrison and our guest, John Collins. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey. Hey. So, John, hey. we were talking during the break about paranormal community and why it's such an important thing to you and kind of what's happened on West Coast Ghost Hunters. So I wanted you to expand on that a little bit, if you could.
Oh, I think I can. Yeah, I'd love to, actually. You know, well, to just talk about relationships, we went to the Mount Hood Ghost Conference, and we ran into Karen Frazier and Bert and Jamie and your husband, and we got to you did your presentation. We got to get a taste of those great EVPs and the evidence about Wellington, and that was compelling to come meet you guys. But more importantly, we got to meet you, and then the past is present was there with Ellen and her team, and Patty and Billy from up in the Olympic area or the Washington area by me. By you, yeah,
South
exactly.
Sound
by
Paranormal
you.
Research. South,
thank you. You just saved me, South Sound. And by the way, and for the record, I think Patty has the best sense of humor out of any paranormal. There's a lot of runner ups and some really clever and funny people, but Patty is just, she's amazing. She should be a writer for Leno or something. But anyway, you know, and then so that grows, and then Black Wolf Paranormal and Past is Present hosted a picnic up in Washington at Fort Silicon, and that was an incredible event, and everybody gets to network in there and work together, and there wasn't, you know, any drama or things like that. And then the Port Gamble Conference kind of is awesome in two ways. We got to meet the folks up there from the Olympic Peninsula Paranormal Society just Scott and Jackie and Mary, the whole team up. They're a fantastic team. They really scientifically go at it, too. Their approach is awesome. But while I was up there for that conference, they talked about a fundraiser that they were doing in the first part of March. And I said, well, hey, come on to the community and put your event on our event schedule, and we'll make a push and try to help you. And you know, sure enough, they did that, and we made the push, and we were, I'm positive we were a big part in helping them, and they actually had to add a second night to that event. And while I know we didn't sell personally every ticket for it, but the community rallied up and for something worthwhile, and it was just nice to see that happen. And I think that, you know, just the same way in being on the radio, I put the, a couple days ago, I said I was going to be on the radio, and the amount of people that responded was kind of overwhelming and gratifying that people are here listening, because it's part of our community and what we're doing. So building those relationships and working together is just the best experience ever. So
yeah, and I enjoy my time on West Coast Ghost Hunters. I'm, as you are well aware, I'm not always very good at making it work, but you know, that's just me. When we were in Yakima, John was there, and we were having a little gathering, and John grabbed my computer and fixed a bunch of stuff on my West Coast Ghost Hunters. It was pretty messed up, wasn't it, John?
No, it wasn't messed up. It was just, it needed a little bit of TLC.
That's right.
I know it's an application-rich website, and unfortunately, there's more applications. In fact, I added a neat deal. You know, when you look holistically, when you look at a community, you know, people have things. They, you know, so I put in a little classified deal. The test one's my little puppy, and I said my puppy's not for sale. My wife would kill me. And but I mean, paranormal people need jobs and things like that. So that website will actually have to. I mean, integrating a jobs board where you can go in and
awesome.
and put in what you're looking for a job, and then there's several search engines that will report back and send you independently an email. So if you're looking for work, that's something that could help you too. So we're trying to build, you know, utilitarian purpose and things in there too. So it's not just about ghosts. It's about, you know, the wellness of a community and being able to help and share as well. So the whole thing is just evolving into something I hope is going to be really neat down the road, and looking forward to keeping the project going.
So it's westcoastghosthunters.com, eastcoastghosthunters.com, ukghosthunters.net.
Perfect. Yeah.
And they all take you to the same spot, sort of.
Sort of. And they're being, and our developer is working on extra pages for each that are, you know, just creating a little more identity. But the bottom line is to get in and make people comfortable about their identity to get there. And that seems to be working, too. If you look at the team section, we've got teams from Pennsylvania and New Jersey and Arizona. The guys from Arizona, Hector and I have talked last week, and few of us are going to go down and do a joint investigation with them. So that, I mean, that to me is also the best thing. You came down to the Klondike, which you want to talk about, and I would love to talk about as well here in a minute. But, you know, and we've been to Wellington. So when you take the teams that are actually intermingling and working and showing their techniques having Q&A sessions and things, it's awesome. So
it's been really great. You've done a really good job with it. So, you know, I think I've told you this before, but I'll tell you publicly, it's a wonderful thing you've done. So congratulations with what you've done with it.
Thank you. And I started it. It's the community. So we've all done it. So everybody, yeah. Pat on the back. Yeah,
that's right. So let's talk about your team. I love your
sure.
team.
Thanks.
I think you have an amazing team. They're wonderful. And you have a couple people on the team, William and Rocky come to mind, who are seem pretty sensitive to me, but not in the Lorraine Warren kind of way, in the very quiet, understated way.
Well, I think Rocky would be the understated way in the sense of he's... I don't know if he's listening. I'm deliberately not looking at that little board flying by and things like that. But, you know, Rocky has he needs to open up and reach his potential. William has done an amazing job at that. He started out, you know, at one level, and he's just, you know, I've watched him for the last year, and it's just an amazing talents that he has. And the accuracy level is just incredible. Now, Rocky's accuracy level is pretty great too. Let me give you an example. Then, you know, well, we had a nice dinner at the Klondike, and then Rob St. Helen and I went on the walkthrough with Ronnie, the owner, and she took us upstairs in that old hotel, which is, you know, as we can talk about, was just amazing to be in there. And she talked about where not one, but three psychics have had this same experience, that this gentleman was killed and he was struck from behind. And so she was saying that she felt it was real. They knew somebody had died, and they knew that somebody had died on that floor, and it was a man, and there was a head injury. But to have psychics talk about where it was at and how, you know, they all felt it. So when Rob and I did that walkthrough, we came back down and we said, look, guys, we're not going to tell you this stuff. We're going to tell you there's activity or something. You know, we talked about what we were trying to accomplish and how we were going to break up our teams and what we were going to do that night. And when the first team went upstairs, Rocky hits that second floor where the gentleman was hit. And you remember, were you with us, Karen, on that one?
I was, yeah.
Yeah, do you remember? He's just like, he couldn't even go down the hallway.
Yeah.
You know, you know, and so when William got there, William knows that something's not right and there was some tragedy here, but he's more wanting to step into it and feel it. And so we're watching two exceptionally gifted folks at just different levels. And it'll be interesting to see where we are a year or two from now, especially with William. I think that he is learning to let go. And talking about sensitive psychics, mediums, whatever you want to do. Karen, you're right up there with them. You're fighting.
You're outing me.
I'm outing you. I'm outing you on your own radio show. But you people don't want to take it's a scary step. So, but you know, when we were in the bar and you knew that there was a presence there, that bar was, I think had a lot more to it than, you know, the next night it was, we had a situation there. It was kind of cool. We got to investigate on a Saturday night, and then the very next Sunday night, Paranormal State did their, they broadcasted their show on or about the Klondike as well. And so it was just kind of interesting to get their take on things as well. But I think that if they would have done a longer or a proper investigation, that they would have found something in that bar, because William found something, you did, you know, Lauren would sense something. I mean, there was that bar had a lot of energy to it. Your son was drawn to that bar too. I mean, he was wanting to,
he didn't go in though.
He didn't. No, he obeyed the wishes of the owner and the team. And, you know, one time though, I came down, I couldn't find him, and I was looking for him because I was just, you know, keeping track of all of our team members. And he's actually in between the bar and the kitchen on the floor with the night camera and the recorder with his arm cocked in so he could get the shot of the bar and he could see the video recorder. But the first thing he said to me was, "I'm not in the bar. The video camera technically is in the bar, but I'm not in the bar." I said, "You're okay. Just don't let anybody trip over those big feet of yours."
I know. He has gigantic.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a good kid.
He is a good kid. He had a good time too. We actually really had a good time. So, the Klondike was an interesting place. So talk a little bit about the history of what this place is, because to me, being up in those upper rooms brought that history home to me. And not necessarily in kind of a compassionate, and boy, that sucks kind of way.
Well, you know, what we know for sure is it was the St. Helens Hotel, and it's about 100 years old. And we know that there were two deaths there, one being was a murder, because a guy was struck and killed from a head blow from the back. That's a no-brainer. Right. Then there was another one where,
actually, that is a brainer, isn't it?
Yeah. That is a brainer. Yeah. Point one thing. So then there was another one where somebody was overdosed on chemicals. I don't remember what the exact chemicals were, but everybody in the hotel stuck to their story on that. You know, the police thought it was murder, but when everybody says, "I was in my room, I didn't see anything, I did," you know, had to be this guy. He was upset. He killed himself. So, you know, you have a murder and a suspicious death there, and you have 100 years of history. And that, you know, we saw the second and the third floor. Nobody's been in those rooms for quite a while, and they're making an attempt to do some renovation now. So that's always, you know, interesting, because history says, or paranormal history says, renovation can get things going as well when you're disturbing the foundation in the
right.
And says so. Just an interesting place. Didn't you get a sense, if you had to go back to investigate now, you had the basement, you had the upper restaurant portion, and then two floors of the hotel. Where, if you had one spot, Karen, I'll turn this around on you, where would you key your investigation?
The bar and the second floor. One spot?
Well, that's okay. That's,
yeah, the bar and the landing on the second floor. When I walked up to the landing of the second floor, I was right ahead of Rocky, and don't you remember, I was right behind you, and I went, "Oh," and, yeah. And you said, "What?" I said, "Nothing."
Yeah.
I was trying to be brave, but there's something there that, whoops, something just fell off the desk. Anyway, there's something there that is definitely, yeah. But the bar is also a really interesting place. You know, I watched that Paranormal State, and they made a lot of the basement. And I didn't get a lot in the basement. The core of the building is where it seems to really be active, and in the back of that bar.
Right. Now, if we go back, and I'm pretty sure we will. William's done a great job as our case manager in establishing some relationships with some pretty neat places. Some we can talk about, some we can't right now. But it's our intent to go back and do that again. So we'll make sure that you get an opportunity to come back with us again. Because cool. I think that to properly investigate something, you almost have to do it once to get an understanding and then process mm-hmm. the evidence and then go in knowing where your focus is. And I think that's right. Always a rewarding experience. The second time's a little better.
Right. Well, now also, didn't that upstairs area where I got the sense, why the upstairs area was kind of the sense of history for me, was because it used to be a brothel as well.
Yes.
And so some of those rooms, to think about these poor women living out their lives of probably desperation, really, trying to survive in this awful way in these rooms that were so tiny, with little closets that, you know, are like not even an eighth of the size of my closet. It just was, it was kind of sad.
Well, and you had, you know, that hotel went through the Depression, miners. I mean, you can go on and on and on and on painting that picture. But, you know, I don't want to sound like a stereotypical guy or a guy that watched too many episodes of Deadwood, but you take any hotel in a lumberjack mill or any kind of a mill town, and it's 100 years old, and you're going to have a brothel to some degree, right? So I think you're a little more sensitive to it than I am. I just took it for granted, so maybe that makes me a bad guy.
No, I'm a chick.
John, while we're talking on the subject of your investigating, we have a question from one of our viewers or our listeners once again. Got anime fever. Would like to know, have you ever gotten any creepy laughing EVPs?
I personally haven't, but members of our team have. So, I haven't been creepy laughed at yet, but our team has got some pretty interesting ones. EVPs are always subjective to how you filter and hear it. So, you know, right. Personally, no. Team, yes.
I have some stuff that I've just started listening to the audio from the Klondike, and I was hoping that I would have some of it actually analyzed before you came on so we could play it for you. And unfortunately, I didn't get to it. But I have a few things that have kind of made me think, huh, I wonder what that is. But I was investigating with, while I've you know, been around you guys a few times now, it's still voices I'm not used to getting on my recorder.
Sure, that type of thing.
So it's always more difficult. Excuse me. I have to cough. I have to mute my thing. I'm sorry. Talk amongst yourselves.
Well, see, you guys have me at an advantage. I didn't know there was a mute button. So, JD, what's your now? I've listened to a few of the shows, and this is mm-hmm. the first time I've got the opportunity to hear or work with you. So, what's your experience with the team? What's your function with the Underground?
I am the science editor.
Oh, nice.
You know, I write articles every once in a while, though I haven't. I took about almost a year sabbatical, and I've been back. Originally, when we first started, we did the podcasts and all that, but I had prepare for, do research and logistics and all that, but that's over now, so I'm
He's
back.
He's an archaeologist, John.
Yeah. I'm okay. An idiot. So.
He didn't seem like sorry. He would dig somebody. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, I'm gonna. I think I got that.
I just dig. That's what I do. You know, I go out and dig.
He's got a sandbox. He's part cat.
Yeah, that's it. So that's kind of what I do. I hang out and do basically what Cheryl and Karen tells me to do.
Oh, yeah, because I tell you to do so much, Jimmy.
Yeah, I know.
I'm so bossy.
I love your magazine. You put out a really good product. And Karen was nice enough to share some hard copies with us. So that's really nice to be able to, you know, show and tell. Like at the conference, uh-huh. you could put those out at the table and say, well, you know, Paranormal Underground, there's our magazine. Check it out online. Or, you know, that's the other thing that I think is really great with, you know, Bert and Jamie. They were really nice to us, and they didn't say anything. I checked out their website, and here's our logo and a link to our website on their front page, which is about it was absolutely incredible. So you
yeah,
know,
they're totally awesomely supportive. I will admit, they you know they hawk my book, they point to my websites, they come to all of my radio shows. So for anybody wants to know, Bert and Jamie are Bert and Jamie Coates of Northwest Paranormal Investigation Agency. They're in the chat room.
John, I have a question for you. This is from my end, and how can I word this? I not that you would be offended or anything, but with your scientific background, okay? Because this is something I think about as part of this. We know that paranormal warrants investigation from a scientific viewpoint, and years and years and years, hundreds of years throughout history, it's been reported in the earliest writing. It's been written about. But to date, scientifically, we have not quantified what paranormal activity is.
Yeah, but John's trying. You should see all
exactly.
his equipment.
Exactly. That's my question. Well, in your investigations with the equipment you're using and that type of thing, is that what you're attempting to do?
Yes, are you attempting to
correlate? Okay.
But that's a daunting task, as you said. People have been trying it, you know. But that doesn't mean you can't. And then you also have to live with, in the end, it's your own self-truth. You know that if you saw something or you felt and experienced something, and you know in your heart and soul that's what it is. You have that part. But to be the person, you know, not, and I'm not talking about, there's some absolutely fantastic photography out there that people, the pros, the Brooks Institute, the guys, they don't have answers for us, but we still say that's not a quantifiable definition of paranormal. That's not the absolute truth. That could be smoke and mirrors. They just haven't figured it out yet. Right. To capture that is the quest. You bet. And that's what we're gonna, you know, we're gonna try to do that, and hopefully we can. And we meaning the paranormal researchers that are working on it, not just us, an individual. But
so what would be the piece of evidence that would start you down that path? Do you think, or do you just not know what that would look like?
Well, I think that the reason why we use a lot of video gear and record things, I think, you know, we did a real neat role-playing thing, because in the Klondike, this is how great the team is. In the Klondike, we were told, we had a meeting with Bert and Jamie's and Agos, Ross Allison from Agos and another member of his team. We all met at the Klondike, so that's how we started our relationship with the folks at the Klondike. William seized the moment to visit with her and talk about paranormal. And Ronnie was telling us there at that time that there's glasses that have been broke, if there's tension between workers or things like that. So we did a really neat thing. Rob went up like he was a drunk in the bar and wanted a beer, and William played the role of the bartender saying, "No, go home, we're closed." And we have this, you know, this was recorded, so sometime we ought to play this back. But then other people jumped into the role. Jennifer, one of our recruits, who's has all the qualities to be a great investigator, she came in like his wife and said, "Hey, listen, I heard you lost your job. You're sitting in this bar. You need to come home. What's going on? This is the third time." You know, we tried to create that energy of something was there. So it didn't work. But Rob was kept saying he wanted a beer and wanted a beer. When we were breaking down our equipment later on, lo and behold, there was a bottle of Corona sitting on the deal. And Rob said, "Hey, I got my beer." Well, turned out it was the owner had a half a beer or a partial part of the beer, left it sitting on the back of the bar there. And so it was just a review of the evidence, and common sense ruled it out. But for a moment, we thought about that. But to answer your question, having the actual glass door cooler open, having a beer move from there and be open and sitting on the bar stool after that reenactment to say, "Here's your beer, shut up," or something like that. That to me would be a little bit quantifiable if we had that on a couple of video angles. What do you think?
That would be awesome.
my main thing with that is, and not just that, but and we're going to be getting into it soon when Bert comes on, and I don't know if we'll be talking about this, but we'll be listening to equipment, but the equipment used in paranormal investigating, if we have something that's not quantified, how can we measure it? And we go out and we use EMF and that type of thing. We don't even know what kind of energy an entity would be putting out. So how could it be measured? And how can we document that to show that we're on the right track? That's well, I my think, whole point.
Well, and as a scientist, you know that you have to do a QAQC. You have right. to put a procedure together that says that you're using meters, what are on what scale they're running, how long, you know, right. the calibration right. procedure. You have to go at this in a way that's just not, oh, I bought something and I turned it on, and you're standing next to an electrical field. You have to do baseline readings, and you have to scientifically go at it in an approach that will right. answer those questions to the scientific community. Because in right. the end, you have, if you find something that you believe is a case that you can go forward with, you have to be able to document it and present it in a way where you've, you know, answered the naysayers. So that's right. the, you know, we're well aware, at least in my approach at it, that those are the things we need to be doing.
Right, a solid methodology, and right. you put that down there, and that's excellent. I mean, that's what I wanted to hear, because there's so many people that go out in a lot of groups, and they'll buy the equipment, the latest, the greatest, and all that, and they go out, and they don't know what they're doing with it, and they're really sure. not doing anything with it, you know, unless it's documented, recorded, you're following a methodology that you can write these things up. No one's going to listen to you.
No, in fact, you know, and I'm not saying we have the tightest QAQC policy or anything like that on our team.
Wait, right. stop. What is QAQC?
Well, that's the methodology that you're using. You have to write a process on how you're doing your QAQC. I should just whip out the book and look it up. It's the
question
console.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go on.
Anything that you have that you come up with, an experiment should be repeatable. It should be repeatable under similar conditions, put it that way.
And you have to have a prescribed methodology of
right.
that's quantified on how you did it, and it has right. to be one that will answer the test, because okay, everything comes to a test.
Here's my question about this. If you're dealing with, just pretend that ghosts are human spirits, for instance, and human souls, they're people without bodies. So are you saying that me as a person with a body, if you put me in the same conditions, I would behave in the same way each time?
No.
How does that apply to ghosts then? Because okay. you're talking about something that's unpredictable in nature, which is human consciousness.
All right. Say, for example, that you're in a room and you're investigating, and you're following a strict scientific methodology, and you have this room closed. Okay. You've got your video, your voice recorder, everything's set up in there. You're using the EMF meter. You've taken all your ambient temperatures, all your readings. You've got your baselines established.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of a sudden, everything's on a timer. You get an EVP at a certain time. At that same time, you get a spike on the EMF.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you go into another investigation, you do the same thing, you follow the same procedure, you get an EVP and you get a spike. That's repeatable. Can it be correlated? We don't know. Does it mean you got a spike on the EVP and it caught, or a spike on the EMF and it caused an EVP? Or did the EVP cause a spike? You don't know. You need a lot of information like that before you can run into an analysis to look at it. But that is the right track. That's the type of thing you're talking about. Those kinds of investigations need to be done, and we don't see too many of it. We don't see too many right. people doing that.
Right. Right. Well, hey, gentlemen, we're running up against a break.
Well, let me say one thing real quick. So QAQC, I mean, it's quality assurance and quality control. So,
okay.
Yeah, it just sometimes you know things and they slip out of your brains and they fly right back in. So,
I believe those are called senior moments.
Right.
Okay.
I have several of those every day. So.
Okay. Did you get what you wanted to say in there, John?
I did. Are we on break? Okay. Now?
Yeah, not yet. But we're going. We're going to go to break. So you're listening to Paranormal Underground Radio. When we come back, we're going to have Bert on the line, and John's going to stick around, and he's going to be one of the interviewers. So we'll be right back with Bert Coates.
Hi, everyone. It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Radio Network.
Well, it's an embarrassment of riches because we have Bert, we still have John, and guess who just blew in the door?
Hey guys, it's Rick.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, I came just in time for the monkey spank ad.
Were you afraid that if you left me alone all this whole time that I would do something horrible to you in your absence or something?
Well, my, you know, my name is first for a reason, so I, you know, thought that I'd better pop in.
Well, thank you so much for that. I'm so glad that you're here, because now I can say, dude, I am so much more important than you now because I was on TV.
Well, you are the star of Paranormal Underground, so I'm just some tourist.
Here, folks. Also, I don't know if I think I emailed you on Saturday night in my excitement about the town that we were in, did I not?
Yes, you did.
And what did you think about it? That town is the town that we were in that we investigated with John. Is where they filmed a good part of the Twilight movie, and I have saved the brochure for you of the walking tour.
You did? Are you actually gonna mail it to me like a snail mail?
Hell yeah! Because it's either that or I'll scan it, because it tells you where to go to the parking lot where Edward saved Bella. And it tells you where they had their romantic dinner, and you can go look at Bella's house because the people who live there probably enjoy all those teenage girls, huh?
Oh, that's just so... Well, yeah, of course they do. I mean, everybody likes teenage girls that are filled with angst.
Okay, so, hey, let's get to Bert. Hey, Bert. Oh,
hey, Bert.
Bert.
You know, Rick, you...
Yeah, man.
You came just in time.
Okay.
Yeah, because the real guest is here now? Is that what you're implying?
No, that was more of an X-rated... Oh. Sorry.
Okay. I was going to say, I'm not going to let John sit there and take that now.
See, I got to watch that stuff, because the last time, Bert, I got in trouble. Remember the...
I know. I heard.
Our guest showed up tonight in your absence, however, so woohoo!
That's awesome.
I know. Okay, so, Bert, you're going to talk about equipment that sucks, although I think you called it something much more politically correct than I just did.
You know what I am, and it, not so much that it sucks, it's just stuff to look out for. It's just the normal everyday ghost hunting stuff that everybody's using because the TV shows are using it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of what I wanted to touch on a little bit. And we're talking about the K2 meters and the EMF detectors. You'll notice I didn't put the K2 with the EMF. And recorders and video cameras and DVR systems and stuff like that. No, especially cameras, digital cameras. And I think JD touched on pretty much everything that I was going to talk about. So I'm
way to go.
Sorry.
No. It was
JD, you were perfect in explaining that, some of the stuff that's out there. I think people are misusing.
And it's
pretty sad because ghost hunters, and I just use them because I used to watch them all the time 3 years ago, and because they do it, it's like a cult.
That's the whole point. It's like the people, they want to get into this, they want to understand and things, but they're going about it totally the wrong way, and it's really not their fault, because the people they're looking to educate them are, like you just said, and they're going around with this stuff willy-nilly and giving misinformation and all this and about the equipment and how it's being used and on, and what's the point? Never seen anyone show ever taking this out, trying to find out what this is.
Somebody like John Collins has a site like West Coast Ghost Hunters, because that's right. Part of the whole networking thing is mentoring and working with people to help them. I mean, I've learned a lot from Bert and Jamie and the whole NWPIA team, because I, was pretty clueless when I first came up to Wellington, wasn't I, Bert?
I wouldn't say clueless. I would just say, you were more in needing of some, serious conversation about thinking outside of that box.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And you did a wonderful job with that. So what kind of equipment do you think that people should avoid?
I seriously, and this is just my opinion, but the K2 meter, anything that comes out, and Jamie says this all the time, and I'm going to steal it from her.
She's on drugs. She won't notice.
The K2 meter, if it comes out as a ghost tool and it's labeled or used as one and sold as one, that's something to look out for. And it's an oversensitive EMF detector, kind of, sort of. that can pick up on cell phones from a long distance. Other, you know, natural anomaly. So the K2 is definitely something to really watch out for. Matter of fact, if you're going to buy a K2, you know, use it to, I don't know, hold the door open.
Paperweight.
Paperweight.
That was good, yeah.
Well, and if your team's using the two-way radio, the K2 meter is done.
Right. And the, yeah. And this goes along the lines of you have to do your research. You have to test things out. You have to look beyond what TAPS and all the rest of them are doing and come up with your own conclusions. But seriously, the K2 is probably one of my biggest pet peeves. Any EMF detector that flashes and says ghost hunting tool on it, you want to look out, you know, for those type of things.
Well, hey, Bert, if you guys don't mind if I interject real quick, I love that EMF detector that actually says the ghost meter on it.
Uh-huh.
That is my favorite piece of equipment I've ever seen.
Well, I have a Princess flashlight, and I will tell you that that is a very, very important ghost hunting tool.
Mm-hmm.
I plan to bring it on my next investigation.
Jamie's giving me clue words here.
Go, Jamie.
You know what? And she's absolutely right. Go organic. If you're going to go ghost hunting, don't spend a ton of money. Sorry, John. Don't spend a whole ton of money at the very beginning because you have to.
Remember, sorry. Go on.
And it's, you know, use your mind as a ghost hunting tool first, then start using high priced equipment. You know, you have what is that natural EMF detector that's mixed with the
Tri-Field?
Thank you, Tri-Field meter.
Yeah, that's the one I have.
$250? Is that right?
No, I only paid $100 for it on eBay.
Okay, so for $100, I mean, seriously, you could buy a lot of pens and paper with that. Yep. So, start with that. Personal experiences do count. It's one of those things that when we first started, I was just like TAPS. Personal experiences don't matter, but they actually really do, especially when you catch them on video, which is really important.
Right.
Buy used equipment, for crying out loud. Don't go out and do what I did. We spent $1,800 on this fantastic Sony 1000, specialized filming, semi-professional. There's an oxymoron. professional camera, and we have used it two times. That's $1,800 that's sitting in the spare bedroom. So, you got to really think smart.
Bert, while we're on the subject of it, one of the listeners, Gotcha Anime Fever, has a question. Would a cordless phone or router, when it resets, mess with the K2?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. We did a thing down in Seattle, and we were being filmed at the time, and we asked a question. We had one of those flashy beepy, is what we call it, EMF detectors, because that's about what it's worth. And we asked a question and said, you know, if you make this thing beep twice, that's yes, once or no, or whatever. And it was doing that. But at the same time, you had so much interference with everything going on in Seattle that it wasn't the ghost setting it off. It was electronics.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, anything electronic can set it off.
Okay.
Absolutely. And then, you know, talk about recorders, you know, like voice recorders. You know, there's a fine line between really, really cheap and really too expensive. And I think Olympus, we have one, and we've had it for a while. It's Olympus. It's like 20, how much was it? It was like $40. And this thing does a wonderful job on recording. But like, Karen, yours is a H4 or H2?
The H4, yeah. We got that for other things. We actually got that to record band concerts.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a Zoom H4 and to record Tanner when he plays a saxophone and stuff so that we can send things to Grandma and Grandpa. And we've used it maybe once for that.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't know how to use it.
I got a digital voice recorder that I picked up at Walmart for $20. And I swear to God, that thing can pick up a fly farting from 20 paces.
Nice. There you go.
It's the most amazing thing.
I like the Olympus voice recorders. They're not horribly expensive, but I think that they're just really nice. I like them better than Sony's and things. I think they're pretty good recorders.
You know, I was reading somewhere on the internet just recently about how the crappier the recorder, the more the white noise, the more the ghost you could pick up on the voices of the ghosts. And yeah. really, you have a crappy recorder that has a lot of white noise in the background, you know.
Right.
So it's kind of one of those things.
Let's talk about the ghost box, because John sat down with me for a ghost. Well, actually, no, you weren't with me when we did the ghost box session. No. You did one upstairs at the Klondike, right?
No. Actually, you and I and Jay.
In the bar.
Or in Rocky. Yeah, you got, when you started your ghost box, you got quite a crowd.
Yeah, that's true. And then you guys took it upstairs. And you guys had some kind of interesting stuff happening on the ghost box.
Well, we had an answer, and I'm not sure if it was four or five times, but we kept asking, are you a ghost? And it would answer, ghost, and things like that. So, you know, again, like your advice was, you need to play it back, and you need to listen for the underlining tone and things like that. So it's all part of what we're playing back and talking about now. But, yeah, it was definitely felt like we were being communicated with.
Yeah.
I think that's the key, is where it felt like. And I know that Karen, we were up there, we were using the ghost box up at Wellington, and we got some interesting feedback through that ghost box. But really, how many times does somebody say yes on the radio?
Right.
And see, that's where I have troubles with that. Ghost could, you know, it burns through those channels so quick that it could be radio bleed through. It could be phasing out of one station to another, and it may sound like ghost, but really it's God.
You know, it's actually, Bert, in this case, it's pretty clear that it was ghost and the same voice. But who's to say, if we were being broadcast on an AM band right now, we would have said ghost 500 times in the last hour and a half.
Right.
So, right. Yeah. No, who knows?
Exactly. Yeah. So even though somebody was thinking outside of the box and they came up with a really cool kind of different way of trying to contact ghosts or spirits, you know, it's one of those things. You know, I'm not for certain that ghosts are, you know, the dead. It could be just our imagination. And I think 99% of the time it is our imagination. You know, we go in to places, and the story is always that it used to be a brothel. I have never in my life, there were so many brothels in Washington, I don't think there were enough women. I mean, what was there, like one woman for each brothel? Between Oregon and Washington, there must be 10,000 ladies of the night. And
yes, well, it's still how we all make a living here, Bert.
I know.
That's how Chicago was up until about the 1920s. There was a brothel on every street corner.
You know, yeah. when I come back, you know, I think I'm going to be a brothel.
Okay, very good. So, hey, guys, we need to do the lightning round. But before we do, I understand that Rick has a new project. And so he sent us a commercial for it. Let's hear it.
Three things I was certain. I was madly in love with Edward Cullen. The man I loved might someday try to kill me. And I would never let Rick Hale use Edward's comb in my hair.
In a world where vampire movie heartthrobs won't wash their hair, keeping on-set hairdressers has become next to impossible.
Ew, my comb is stuck!
I do not think that's hair gel.
One man dared to stand up to the forces of scalp crust. One man dared to do Robert Pattinson's hair. This winter, from the third unit, assistant hairdresser of the Twilight Saga, comes the first chapter of the Highlight Saga. Bangs in My Fangs. Rick Hale stars as a man battling the forces of darkness, one matted clump at a time.
This film is not yet rated.
Oh, that's good.
Rick, congratulations. I had no idea.
That is awesome. I am going to be the world's biggest star with that film, let me tell you.
The Highlight Saga, Bangs in My Fangs. Congratulations. You must be so proud.
I am proud. I will finally get to be able to wash that dude's hair and comb it and brush it and style it and everything. I cannot wait.
Oh, Rick, I am so glad that you popped in tonight, because we were going to have to wait until next week with that, and I really didn't want to. All right.
That was great. That was great.
All right, so are you guys ready to do the lightning round? I've got to find it now. Oh, crud. Hold on. Okay, here it is. All right, so everybody ready for the lightning round? And we're going to have Cheryl on. I don't know if Chad's going to pop back on or not. And so I'll just sort of call you out when it's your turn. John's going to participate. Bert, everybody ready? You all know how we do it.
Yeah,
okay, so we already talked about this earlier, about the unidentifiable missile that was fired into the sky on Monday, and that it turns out that it may have been a contrail. If it was a contrail, that's pretty embarrassing. And so what I want to know is, I want you to share with me an embarrassing moment where you mistook one thing for another, Rick.
Are you sure about this?
There's only one word you're not allowed to use. Go!
Cock ring.
Did I just hear your wife laugh at her with a James laugh?
No, she just gasped. Moving right along.
All right. Well, I'm not going to ask. Okay, so Bert, is yours any better?
No. You know what? It's not. Just using the word cock ring makes me giggle. Do you remember in the 80s when all the guys had long hair?
Yeah.
Guy was walking down the street. I was with a bunch of friends in the car, and I was like, wow, look at her butt.
Nice.
She had, she had a beard, and she was smoking a cigarette, but she had great blonde hair all the way.
And apparently a hot ass.
Oh.
So it was the 80s, so I have to ask, was it party in the back and business in the front, or was it just long all the way? Was it like Nelson hair?
No, I think... like long, straight Nelson hair, I think.
All righty. So, John?
mine's not as colorful as that. We had some racehorses when I was a kid, and we had a horse win, and my dad let me have the honor of walking the horse into the winner's circle, and I got so excited I took off for the barn. The jockey told me about 100 yards from the barn, kid, I think you ought to take us back to get our picture taken. So that was embarrassing.
All right. So, Chad. Chad, I thought you were here. Oh, I'm confused.
Sorry, I'm here.
Okay, so Chad, how about you?
Mine doesn't really involve me. It involves my ex-wife. When we were dating, she took me and my brother, back to my dad's house. And, me and my brother looked kind of alike. And she went to grab my butt and,
very nice. Okay, JD.
That started by sounding like a porno flick.
That's silence.
JD, what do you got?
Yeah. It was during the 80s and in college at a party, and I kind of like what Chad said, except it was me. I mistook someone for the girl I had went there with and walked up behind her and grabbed her by the butt.
Oh, see, there's a time and place for everything, guys, and it's called college. Cheryl, go ahead, JD, sorry.
No, that's okay.
So, that was Cheryl.
Funny. My embarrassing moment when I mistook one thing for another just happened like a couple minutes ago.
Uh-huh.
I mistook Rick Hale for Robert Pattinson, and it was really embarrassing. Sorry, Rick. I'm sorry.
He
only wishes he could be this good looking.
That's right. So mine actually involves a misheard lyric that I was singing at the top of my lug. Instead of singing urgent, 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 I was singing virgin, virgin, virgin.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
I'm still a little embarrassed by that. All right. So this week I developed a theory that everyone at some point in their life is going to appear somewhere in the media, on news, television, radio. For instance, Rick is going to star in a movie. And I'm aware that it sounds suspiciously like Andy Warhol's 15 minutes of fame theory, but this is the Karen Fraser, you're going to be in media theory. So I want to know, mine was, of course, this week when I was on the Travel Channel, and now I'm so much more important than Rick, although now he has a movie. He'll be first forever. So I want to know what your 15 minutes of fame was, Rick.
I had my 15 minutes of fame back when I was a sophomore in high school, and I was on the Oprah Winfrey Show.
You were on the Oprah Winfrey Show in the audience, or?
I Yeah, no, I was in the audience. It was about teen pregnancy and pressuring girls. You know, or if you were a guy, pressuring girls to have, you know, sex with you. So I got up and I said, and this is perfect quotation. I think that it's unfair when a guy says to his girlfriend, "If you love me, you'll have sex with me." And Oprah looked at me and said, "Do you have a girlfriend?" I said, "Yes." And she said, "You've never said that." I said, "No." And she was like, "Those words have never come out of your mouth." And I said, "No." So I've already had my, you know, shot at fame.
Oh, wow. That's nice. Impressive. You were on Oprah. You are important. So, Bert, have you had your 15 minutes?
In your face, Frazier.
I don't know. I don't know if we ever really had 15 minutes, Frank. Well, I guess we were filmed a few years ago up at Wellington, so we're still waiting for our fame.
It's on the WellingtonProject.org website. WellingtonProject.org.
There you go.
No, you have too. You were on that Susie Homemaker show.
Oh, we were on. What was her name?
I don't know. Susie Homemaker is the best I can come up with. She's like some local Katie. That's... Was it Katie something?
No, it was Kelly Moore show.
Kelly Moore
on Channel 5.
Yes, she was was a local Susie Homemaker doing a Halloween show, and Bert and Jamie were on it, and they were fabulous. So, John, I'm sure you've had more than 15 minutes of fame.
Oh, well, you know, I think the 15 minutes of fame's right now. I'm on your world-class radio show with world-class people and participating, and it's an honor. So I think I'm living it now. So
yes. And who do you think is more important, me or Rick?
Well, sorry, Rick. She makes the snickerdoodles, and I love Chicago. I enjoy being there. I was there just a couple months ago, but I'm going to go with the snickerdoodles and say Karen.
Awesome. Woohoo! There you are. You heard it here, folks. You're first. So, Chad,
she's got a hell of a princess light, too. So.
Yeah, and my princess flashlight is adorable. So, Chad, what's your 15 minutes?
Well, I'm kind of saving it up for when we finally get our own TV show.
Okay.
But, all right. I mean, does the radio count?
Yeah, radio, TV, newspaper. Yeah. I think anything where you've appeared in media.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. So, this is it. Well, you know, Chad said when we watched the I was sort of emailing with Cheryl when we watched the Travel Channel show the other night, and I emailed Cheryl and I said, that was it. There was this little snippet of me at the beginning that was less than it was like 2 seconds. And I said to Cheryl, that was it. And Chad says, see, well, then you have like 14 minutes and 58 seconds left. So JD, what's your 15 minutes?
I don't think I've had mine unless we count tonight when I got to host the show with Her Royal Highness.
Oh,
that would be good.
I have brushed you all my greatness, and Rick is going to comb you with Robert Pattinson's comb. So there you go. Oh, Cheryl, have you had your 15 minutes of fame?
I don't think so.
Fangs in the fame.
That's classic. I love that. Aside from our little radio show here, I've had a couple of flashes of fame maybe. I don't think you could call it fame, but 1984 was apparently a big year for me because, you know, that was the year of the Olympics in LA, and I was on the news a couple of times and on the Olympic coverage in the stands, mind you. I wasn't actually in the Olympics, but...
Oh, see, there you go. Well, you know, Cheryl and I have sort of played our own version of 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. And I do know one thing about Cheryl's sister that is a nice little brush with fame.
Hmm.
Is she going to kill you if we share it on the radio? Nobody listens. It's internet radio.
She's probably not listening. She may kill me, but I don't know.
Your sister totally made out with Ryan Seacrest.
Wow.
Did I actually tell you that?
You did, because I was telling you, remember I was telling you that my little sister dated Richard Grieco?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
21 Jump Street fame, so you shared with me that, so there, we've outed both of our sisters.
Yeah.
That's not something to be proud of.
That is funny.
Or either both.
Richard Grieco, that is just not something to be proud of.
Okay, how about this? My mother was Hillary Swank's... middle school counselor.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay, nice. That one's better. All right. Let's moving on.
Fine actress.
Yes, fine actress. This week, CERN's Large Hadron Collider smashed 2 lead ions together, and it created a mini Big Bang, which is a total oxymoron. So here's what I want to know. What's your favorite oxymoron, Rick?
Military intelligence.
Okay. How about you, Bert?
You know, mine's going to be oxymoron. The Greeks, it was a Greek word, and oxy meaning sharp, and moron meaning dull.
Oh, so, you've been on Wikipedia today. Somebody said
you bet your bitch.
Very good. Okay, so John.
Jumbo shrimp.
Jumbo shrimp and a mighty tasty oxymoron, I might add. Chad?
Living dead.
Oh, good one. JD?
12-ounce pound cake.
Ooh, I've never heard of 12-ounce. Is that a Southern thing?
You ever buy a pound cake in the store?
I've never bought a pound cake.
If you buy a pound cake, it's usually 12 ounces.
Uh-huh. So. See, and I don't do pound cake because I have celiac disease. So, Cheryl.
I'll go with artificial intelligence.
Ah, okay. All right. So, here's one for the archaeologists and scientists in the room. Archaeologists suggested that beer has played a key role in the advancement of civilization because ancient farmers really want to cultivate cereal grains in order to make that beer. So what I want to know is this. What other great advances in society is alcohol likely responsible for, Rick?
Me being on this radio show.
Every day, huh? Yeah, that's right. So, Bert?
Mine is going to be alcohol-related deaths.
Oh, it's kind of Darwin award, Darwinian.
D-U-I.
Okay, John.
Mine's a lot lighter. I'm going to say karaoke and or ladies' night.
Oh, ladies' night. Woo! Awesome. Chat.
Well, seeing as how our founding fathers, a lot of them basically drank beer, and I think it probably has something to do with the formation of our country.
Okay. JD?
One night stands.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a glorious advancement of civilization that is.
Nice.
That's right.
That's right. Okay, Cheryl, what's yours?
You know, I honestly think that I was like trying to give this some actual thought, but you know, if it really has helped in any way. And I think it's led to some really good writings from authors and poets. Because you know, if you think back to some of the greats, they were alcoholics.
I'm drunk all the time when I write.
There you go.
See? To be honest. I'm drunk right now, as probably all the rest of you. So, except for Jamie, who is on Vicodin instead. So there you go. Okay, so a New Zealand paranormal team noticed an uptick in paranormal activity reports following a September earthquake, and they hypothesized that earthquakes increase ghost activities. Rick, what do you think?
You know what? I'm going to go ahead and agree with that because there's a lot of geomagnetic, whatever that comes out of that. So yeah, I would say that's possible.
Okay, cool, Bert.
Since I wasn't paying attention, I'm going to agree with Rick.
Oh, very good. All right.
Of course, and you know why that is, Bert? Because my name is first on this show.
No, you know why it is?
There you go.
It's because you said cock ring three times.
Oh, no, that does make him pretty awesome because I don't think I have said cock ring three times.
I'm going to throw a rim job in there.
I was just going to say rim job three times, except that I was afraid that it wouldn't appear.
I'm going to beat that with glory hole for 20.
Yeah, so, you win.
If you light a candle and you stare in the mirror and you say glory hole, glory hole, glory hole, will one appear like Bloody Mary, do you think?
Something will... Well, never mind.
So who are we on? Was it John's turn? I think it was. John, do you even remember the question?
Yeah, and I think it's I buy into that quite a bit. You know, if you look back at paranormal investigating and when homes or businesses are being renovated or structural changes are happening and disturbing things, that it's, you know, it's been synonymous with peak paranormal activity. So I think it's a no-brainer.
Okay, Chad.
Yeah, I think it's possible because they say the forces, the geological forces can sometimes cause lights in the sky above where all that stress is.
Okay. So, JD, you buying it?
Yeah, and the reason I buy it is because when there's an earthquake and you have a shifting of a fault, there's a huge amount of electromagnetic energy that's released. And I think that people that are more sensitive to that are going to experience things. We know that electromagnetic energy can cause false paranormal feelings, like feeling of being watched, nausea. You can hear sounds. You can even hallucinate, that type of thing. And I'm thinking that more people that are sensitive to that are going to be affected by it.
Okay, cool. I'm sorry, I was laughing at what Rick wrote instead of what you were saying, I promise. Oh, yeah, Rick just wrote, I bet I could get Cochrane in one more time.
Sorry, Rick.
Oh, Cheryl, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with everybody else. I think that, you know, the energy...
You think that Cochrane should be said on the show more often?
No, I think we've got that covered, actually. I think we're good to go there.
Cochrane?
Yeah, whatever.
I just wanted to say that.
So you're down with it then,
I'm Cheryl. Down with that, but then we also have to look at maybe it's a psychological effect of earthquakes. But I think either is possible.
Okay, so this is absolutely my favorite question of the night. A female boa snake is reported to have given virgin birth 22 times. So I can only assume that this means that the end is near and that snakes are about to take over the world. What I want to know is, what is your sign that will make you realize that the end is near, Rick?
That I can get cockering it one more time. I'm sorry, Cheryl.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you showed up. Okay, Bert, what's your sign that the end is near?
That they, I don't know, find out religion is a joke.
There you go. I like that one.
All right. So, John?
It's a no-brainer. When our tech manager, Rob St. Helen, says there's no more equipment to buy, we're done. The end of the world.
I think you're right on that. Chad?
When George W. Bush's presidency is considered a good one.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Ooh, yeah. That is a good one. I like that.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
He's a douchebag.
I think the end will be near when we all see that Chuck Norris has shaved his beard.
But he did. He was in the, he did that commercial where it was just Chuck Norris with the mustache.
Then repent.
The end is coming. So Cheryl, do you have a sign that the end is near?
I do. The sign is if Sarah Palin ever becomes president.
Oh my God, that was yeah, yeah. Totally.
That'll be the end, all right.
You just terrified me.
See what I'm saying there?
Cutting education. Yay!
I have time to get this last question in, Cheryl.
This has to be a true lightning question.
Okay, lightning, guys. We're sending a robot to the moon in about 3 years from now for the low, low price of just $200 million. What I want to know is, do you think that there's actually more to be learned by going to the moon, Rick?
No.
Okay, Bert?
No.
John?
Been there, done that. No.
Okay, Chad.
Well, I do think we've been there. I just think there's probably more going on there than we are aware of, you know, as far as the water and stuff like that.
Okay. JD?
Yeah, I think we could learn more, but I don't think we're going to learn it with robots.
Cheryl?
Yeah, definitely. I think they're trying to learn more. I think they can. I've heard that they're trying to establish colonies on the moon, and I think it actually will happen in the distant future.
Very good. Okay, so Bert Coates, NWPIA.com, and Paradrama.com.
And NowSpring.com.
I thought the last time you said to me you did the analprobe.com and I looked it up. I am never doing that again.
Oh my, Karen.
Just don't try Felching.com.
Oh, God, okay. Or GermanScheisseMovies.com. So, okay, so Don, WestCoastGhostHunters.com, EastCoastGhostHunters.com, and UK
Ghost Saeed.
UKGhostHunters.net.
So on our next show, Cheryl, what do we have?
We have Nick Redfern, cryptozoologist and ufologist, joining us. We're actually going to pre-tape the interview with Nick, but we'll play it live next Thursday. And then following up Nick, we'll have the ghost gadget guy, Michael Kravchuk, talking about
I love Michael.
Full spectrum cameras. And they captured a Shadow Man video with his team, and he's going to share the results of that, how that came about.
cool.
Well, that's
so,
pretty rad.
Yeah. So Bert and John. Rad. Thank you. John, did you have a good time?
I had an excellent time. It's been a real treat.
Will you come back?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, very good. Okay, so I think that before we go, we should stay tuned after we're done with Paranormal Underground Radio to listen to the show that's coming up next, which is Night Views Radio in just about 4 minutes. I think on the way out, we should hear the details of Rick's project one more time. What do you guys think?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, go
All right, here we go. Good night, everybody.
Good night. It is rad.
Hey, stop
Make
laughing.
Sure you guys read the magazine.
Of three things, I was madly in love with Edward Cullen. The man I loved might someday try to kill me. And I would never let Rick Hale use Edward's comb in my hair.
In a world where vampire movie heartthrobs won't wash their hair, keeping on-set hairdressers has become next to impossible.
Ooh, my comb is stuck!
I do not think that's hair gel.
One man dared to stand up to the forces of scalp crust. One man dared to do Robert Pattinson's hair. This winter, from the third unit, assistant hairdresser of the Twilight Saga, comes the first chapter of the Highlight Saga. Bangs in My Fangs. Rick Hale stars as a man battling the forces of darkness, one matted clump at a time.
This film is not yet rated.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the ZTalk Radio Network.